Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining me from across Los Angeles is my good friend Jay Kogan. Jay spoke previously at the Compliance and Ethics Institute and is a TV producer and writer for shows ranging from The Simpsons to Frasier to Malcolm in the Middle and the very funny film The Wrong Guy. Jay, thanks for taking the time away from quarantining to talk to us.
Exactly. Right. From doing nothing. Adam, it is always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. And to talk with you. Now, we're going to be talking today about making comedy work in compliance training and how to make your compliance training scenarios more interesting and learning from someone who does this day in and day out, though on a much bigger field. Now, Jay, people have been working to make compliance training, you know, more engaging by using a much more narrative format, telling the story of someone facing dilemma or doing the wrong thing and showing the consequences of it. From your experience, what makes for good storytelling?
Well, I mean, there are very simple elements to make for good storytelling. The first one is an interesting character. And then the second is finding an interesting obstacle or conflict that character has to go through, and then seeing how to resolve that conflict. That's it. It's a 1-2-3 step. So, if you had a boring character going through a conflict, nobody cares. If you have a really interesting character not going through a conflict, no one cares. And if you don't work to try and make some kind of resolution, it's very unsatisfying.
Yeah, definitely would be. And, you know, it's worth pointing out that even Seinfeld, a show that supposedly was about nothing, you know, there were
always about something.
It was always about some issue they had. Maybe
Seinfeld was actually about, like, you take the smallest thing in the world, the most annoying smallest thing, and make that a big conflict. Always.
Right.
You know, it's like, I can't find a sharp pencil. And then that happens to blow up into a thing where someone for some reason needs a sharp pencil to save a life. So there's huge stakes in the stupidest thing.
That's why I switched to using pens. Now,
yes.
How do you keep the hero real and relatable? I mean, especially in these situations where you want to show somebody who's doing something that they shouldn't, you know, how do you make him so that people project and see themselves in him or her?
Well, I think that that everyone can find themselves relating to a lot of people. I am not anything like the John McClane in Die Hard. I'm not athletic. I don't come from New York. I'm not going through a divorce. But when I watch Die Hard, there's not a moment where I don't go like, oh my God, I totally get what he's going through. Right. And so it's not about somebody who's like me, but it's about a situation or a person I can understand. And so I can understand being trapped in a building without my shoes and thinking this is a hard situation. And so I think you start with what you know and what's true. So you try to create a character from the world that you know, that kind of person, even if it's not you, that we all know. And we go from there. We know what bosses are like, and we know what the lazy employees like, and we also know what a dedicated first responders like. And we know there's archetypes in this world of people, of heroes, or of the lead characters that we know. People who are flawed, people who are not flawed. It depends on the kind of show you're making, but you know, if you start with the archetype of a person, and I often find most of my shows when I do it, I start with me and some aspect of me that I want to project, whether it's me as a father, whether it's me as a husband, whether it's me as just a guy struggling to be liked, or a guy struggling to make money. It's whatever part of me I want to tap into. And usually when I write something, all the characters that I write, I somehow try to embody them in my head. I become them. Even when I was writing The Simpsons, I would, what would Homer say? How would he react in this situation? I became part of it, and part of Homer is me, like the stupidest, most the most basic id-driven kind of part of me is Homer, and so I can always tap into some part of it. And by the way, I think a lot of people relate to Homer because he is fairly dim and very id driven. All of us have those moments when we just want a beer or we just want a sandwich, and that's overtaking us even in a time of emergency.
I always think because Homer is sort of every man without that little voice saying, "Wait a minute, I'm just it's just me."
Even when he has that little voice, and the little voice is defeated by sandwich, it's fine. It's because we all have that moment of, of just wanting to cater to ourselves.
And I think, there's a really good point there is that, when you're creating training on an issue and creating the person who's put in the dilemma, in a lot of ways, it's good to start with yourself and how you would deal with it, or start with somebody that you know and like and understand. Now, it's important for people. Go ahead.
And because you've studied these particular dilemmas, you know how there are traps set up for human nature, whatever they might be. If it's a bribe or if it's a circumstance where somebody thinks they can get away with something and they want to, human nature says you want to, and then how do you defeat that? How do you sort of go past that to the making the right decision?
Which is often way too difficult for people. Now, it's important for people watching this kind of training not to hate the person who's put in the situation and making a bad choice, but realize, wow, that could have been me. How do you get the audience to that point? How do you help them along to identify with someone, even the person who isn't making good choices?
Well, I think we can all relate to that person. I think the trick is to not make that person an arch villain, to dehumanize that person, to just make them evil, or the person who's only doing wrong choices. Then we will stop paying attention to that person. But if that person is both complex enough to be a real person with real emotions and sometimes trying to do the right thing, but other times caught in a bind, we get that more, because we don't see ourselves as villains. Even when we do the wrong thing, we see ourselves as human. It's important to see your characters, even when they do the wrong things, as human, who are attempting to do the right thing, or think, even when they're doing the wrong thing, think, it doesn't matter. I'm not really hurting anybody. I'm not aiming at hurting anybody. Their motivations, their intentions matter a lot. If they're arch villains who don't care about anybody, who only do the wrong things, then they're no longer human, and they're no longer relevant to us.
Now, let's switch gears a little bit. Humor's gotten much more popular in compliance training as a way to engage people, get them to appreciate this stuff, break up sort of what's perceived as dull. What
Who's
are
the
some of
comedy king of compliance? I want to know. Who's the one who says, "Oh my God, that guy, the Larry David of compliance."
you know what? I think there's several competitors for that
Okay.
role.
All right. Good.
And actually there's several vendors, with solutions for that. What are some of the mistakes that people make when they're trying to do something funny?
Well, not being funny. I think the big mistake, since humor is a subjective thing, that something that one of us might think is funny is going to be something that other people don't think is funny. So you try to aim at kind of what you think most people would agree is funny. It's not too specific necessarily, or if it is specific, you don't have to know the specific fact or thing the person's saying, if we can also relate to it without having to know the little bit and piece that they're talking about. If it's a compliance rule that only compliance officers know about, that might make you guys super laugh all the time, but the people that you're showing this film to don't get it at all. That's a bad joke. Everybody has to be in on the joke. So you have to take something that is more universal. You also have to do it. I think when you tell a joke, you can't tell a joke like, "And this is funny," and then put a punchline or something and wait for a laugh and play it for big yucks. I think the more you play it to reality, the funnier things are. So the less you acknowledge that things are funny, the funnier things are, because you're not hitting it so hard. There's a lot of pressure on a joke if you say, "This is the funniest joke in the world. Listen." Very, very few people will laugh because they're expecting something much better. But if you just slide it in into a real circumstance and find something that's a little bit absurd or a little bit strange or a little bit silly, it'll work much better. And it won't interfere with the story you're telling.
Yeah, and also I would imagine one of the things that's also adds, given that people are doing compliance training around the world, is you got to also always recognize is that comedy always doesn't always translate well across different languages and cultures.
Right. So at least you could be telling the story that you're telling very clearly about the conflict, the trouble that the person is facing, the dilemma. Tell that first and worry about what's funny second. So at the very least, somebody in another part of the world that doesn't understand fully your culture will at least understand the dilemma. And that's number one. Then number two is, yeah, try to be funny. Try to make it funny. What's funny in your world? What's real? What's interesting? And, you know, absurdity is, you know, can be relative. You know, what's really funny is the truth. So if you're telling the truth and you're doing it, presenting it in sort of a little bit of a heightened way, then it's funny. The truth heightened is always funny. So if you take, you know, somebody gets hungry for lunch, that's true. Somebody gets super hungry for lunch, they can't think of anything else, and they just, you know, are ripping through the office to find food, that could be funny or scary, depending upon how you do it.
Finally, what makes for good tales of right and wrong versus ones that fall flat?
That the dilemma has meaning. You know, I mean, it's the same thing if you were at school and said to kids, you know, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that, and in some sort of don't cheat, and just say in general, don't cheat. Yes, we all agree, don't cheat. But then putting that kid in the situation of you got to get a good grade so that you can get into college and so that your parents can be proud of you, and suddenly you put motivations behind it. Then all suddenly we know why he might have a motivation to cheat, and we might relate to him a little bit more, and therefore it has more meaning to us. So having a character have reasons to do what they're doing that we can understand and we can even empathize with is a big part of it. That's what humanizes that person. So it's very important that person have you know, a dilemma that feels real, whether it's cheating or bribery or I don't know, whatever we consider inappropriate behavior in the office, or, you know, not being completely honest when you need to be honest, revealing something that's embarrassing but it's important to reveal for the sake of the company. Those things have to be put into context that feels like, okay, well, I can see myself having that same issue and that same dilemma. I never write a villain in anything that I've ever written where I don't place them in a position where I thought I could understand why that person's the villain. I can understand why that person's doing the actions he or she is doing because of how she came to this moment. What led up to it, what his or her motivations were, and what they really want out of life, and why they got off the rails.
So basically, keep the human is the best way to really make it relatable.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you make the characters just cartoons, then I don't know that it will land as much. I mean, it still could be funny, but I don't think it will land as hard as if you make the people. Yeah.
Well, Jay, thanks so much for sharing these insights with us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.